You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Wouter. Hello, Wouter.
Hey, Kyle. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How is your Saturday going over there in the Netherlands?
It's fine. It's a bit cold, but I just got a new bed, and I've slept so great.
Oh, a new bed. That's exciting. That's not something you get, you know, for every couple years. So how is it? Is it amazing?
It's huge, it's great, and it's amazing.
That sounds lovely. I'm already looking forward to buying one in a couple years, just because, you know, it's a fun purchase. It's expensive.
It is. It is a big expenditure, but it's totally worth it.
Well, good. I'm glad you're taking advantage. Our weather dipped down here again. We were enjoying some nice, like, almost summer weather for about a week. And then it snowed. It did a rainy snow on us, so...
Yeah, it's still every night quite a bit below freezing here, so it's cold.
Ooh, well, I would say, you know, I trade you, but we're just a little bit above that, so I'm going to keep what we have and let you enjoy that. At least you have a nice bed to relax in.
That's definitely true.
Let's entertain our lovely folks out there this week. First of all, by reminding everyone to take advantage of the CivCast challenge, which is going on in the subreddit. I just want to make sure we're always calling that one out, because that isn't... I think they have until actually the first... they have until They have until Friday the 2nd of March to actually submit their February CivCast challenge, since that month ends a little bit early. You guys have some extra time to do it, so... VectorCat will come on 2 weeks from today and be reading out the winners of February's challenge. And then I believe March's challenge is going to be all about rise and fall as that, you know, makes its way into the hands of the awesome people out there. Which will also give them some time to digest the patch notes, which will be the main focus of today's episode. But before we get to patch notes, we want to go over some viewer emails that we've received. We've received a couple. Those can go to civcastpodcast@gmail.com. Nice and simple. civcastpodcast@gmail.com. So let's start these out, Voucher, because we've got two good ones here. Well, let's go ahead and start with, is it Daisman's email here? If I'm saying your name wrong, maybe it's Daisyman. But Daisyman writes us and says, "Hi, guys. I'd like to know more about some things that I'm missing in the game, particularly the terrain tiles. Too often, I've lost track of natural wonders, villagers, or barbarians, and in this sepia-toned map because they don't stand out. I felt your pain here and there. I want to find or make a mod that adds colored ink to those tiles or uses normal map tiles, anything but the map we currently have." Wouter, you mentioned you have some insight and some input into this. Did you have something in mind?
There's something like, especially everything that is user interface related, I always come up with this specific mod. Unfortunately, it is not updated to Rise and Fall yet, but I know they're working on, and it's CQUI, Community Quick User Interface. It is a great mod that does a lot of different kind of things for like making things more visual. For example, when you select a builder, you get like a different lens screen, which shows which tiles are pillaged, which tiles can be improved with a resource on it and stuff like that. It's really useful for so many different things. They also reworked the trade route system to make it more kind of less cluttered. In that way that you can select if you want to focus on production, all the production things are listed on top in descending order, things like that. It is an amazing mod with a lot of capabilities. Unfortunately, like I said, it's not updated to Rise and Fall yet, but I expect it like probably coming week it will be updated. I know they're working on it every weekend. It is a community thing, and if you have programming experience, you can help with it. As far as I know, it's open source where everybody can contribute to it through their GitHub.
Oh, that's so awesome. It
really is, and that is probably where I would direct you first to check that out, see if that's something for you, and I really like it myself, and I can't wait until it's updated so I can use it again.
So I just searched, so for anyone out there that's trying to find it, CQUI with the word Civ 6 next to it gets you right to the GitHub that I think you just mentioned. It is Chaos's Quick UI, and like you said, it doesn't look like there's any updates for it, so that's a bummer.
It's also available through the workshop.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, it is definitely there. The user that made it is called, well, Azurency, I think. And therefore.
Yeah, yeah, Azurency. Yeah.
And it's a great mod. Unfortunately, you can't use it yet, but I expect it to be there soon.
Well, I think that's a fantastic call out, Voucher. It's always good because I do admit, I don't know. I love the visual aesthetics of the actual style of the tiles. I have no issues with that. I think it's a nice, healthy, cartoonish change from what we had in Civ 5, which I just think that innovation is great. I think that where the fog of war, remember when it was all clouds in Civ 5?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think those clouds were pretty, but I did like that comparison a little bit better than like the map going into the more like just crudely drawn look that we have now. It doesn't bother me anymore, but like when they were first showing the stuff, I was like, you know, I could do with some cartoonish clouds up there or something else instead. Like my brain.
The thing is though, like there are some really good gameplay advantages to having this as well. Even if you don't have direct vision over things, can still clearly show you, for example, when an AI is building a wonder. Even if you didn't see that before, you would still have vision of that pretty much at that point.
That's a good point.
And therefore, there are gameplay advantages why I like having this version and not like the cloudy version in Civ 5. Just because I can get more information out of it, but you do have to actively look for it and everything like that.
That's a very good point. You do have that's fantastic. I guess I have taken advantage of that in some of those Rise and Fall games that I played recently, as I did notice that there was, you know, a wonder over there, and I could kind of spy on who was doing it. And in fact, I think it did influence one of my decisions of, you know, whether to waste some production on trying to do it. I'm like, they're already ahead of me, so I'm just going to sit this one out.
Yeah, exactly. And those kinds of things. Also seeing where people have their spaceports and stuff like that, and seeing if things are being built there, it can really make a big difference in winning and losing the game even.
Well, there you go. So CQUI will be the solver of all your problems whenever it's actually updated and ready to go for Rise and Fall. We'll go ahead and put those in the show notes below. So if you're getting this in podcast form, I'm going to add at least the GitHub link in there. I already grabbed and snagged that for us. So I'll have that in the description below. We have another email here. This was via the website submission, which you guys are welcome to use whenever you go over to civcastpodcast.com. At the very bottom, there's a little like type in form thing. So Turner wrote in and said, greetings, Civcast crew. I hope you've all had a fine holiday and are ready to jump into season 2. Again, I admit, this is me. I was late with all this. I have a very strange problem that I hope you can help. I was first introduced to the Civ series when I saw Quill18 streams of Civ 5. I bought Civ 5 and the following expansions. When Beyond Earth came out, I bought it and enjoyed it, as did I. Civ 6 was an immediate buy, and again, I thought it was a brilliant game. Lately, I've been playing Stellaris, in my opinion, one of the best games currently around. Voucher plays Stellaris.
I do. Expansion coming out soon again.
Ooh. He says, but I've recently realized recently that I have a problem. When I see Civ news, I always try to keep up to date. When a YouTuber I follow starts a series of one of the said games, I will watch every minute. But I always struggle to play the game myself. I always go a few eras and just stop playing. In both Civ 5 and Civ 6, I've started over 200 games, but finished less than 20. I've tried all victories and most Civs. I'm not losing through a lack of understanding. As I said, I devour all the content. So what is wrong with me? Why can't I close out games? Why can't games keep my attention? I wonder if anyone else has felt this way. Scroll down. Thank you for the brilliant podcast. Let's see what the new year brings us. Turner from England. Well, Turner, I have to start this off. I think Valter's going to have some great thoughts on this. We've kind of had a little bit of this conversation before, especially, maybe last summer. So, well, not a full year. Well, maybe it was about last year. I suffer from this immensely, where I have a really hard time completing a game of Civ, whether it was 5 or 6, because it's really fun in the start when lots of things are triggering and things are happening very quickly. But as you get into it and the world is massively expanded, not only in Civ 5 where your turn times taking longer to load, but you know, there's just a lot to micromanage and sometimes not always like really exciting things. I think in the beginning of the game, you're seeing like, I need to build these 10 things in my city. What do I do first? And then you're like, okay, I've built all the things. Now, what do I work on next? Valter, where do you kind of approach this question from?
Like a lot of people have this problem. You're definitely not alone. And it has been a thing with Civ ever since I started playing Civ 3. The beginning of the game is always more interesting. You can make more of a difference and those kinds of things. That being said, I think you are like probably losing the biggest problem is you losing interest in it while you're playing the game. And my advice to that, even though it's kind of weird, up the difficulty, maybe even like 2 steps. That way you're playing from behind pretty much from the beginning. And you will be like more interested throughout the game because you're catching up still. You're not like, oh yeah, no, I already did this and I surpassed like these saves and I cannot take it easy. The game keeps being more interesting that way, and you keep feeling like you have to be on your toes. You're more involved into the game. You're more actively trying to gain that edge back again or whatever. And usually, that really helps for me. If I'm feeling too, yeah, pretty much complacent by playing the game, that I lose interest or whatever, just make the game more difficult for yourself. Unless you're already playing a deity, then yeah, you can't do that really. But that's usually not the case. When I ever do a deity game or whatever, I always have to keep on doing my utmost best to keep up with the AI because they have such great advantages. And therefore it just keeps my interest so much more in the game. I'm so much more involved in whatever I do. Every decision is so much more important, and therefore I'm just more inclined to finish out a game as well, because I want to see all that effort I put into it. I want to see it come to fruition.
That makes total sense. That makes absolute sense. So you're saying really kind of just put yourself under pressure to accomplish your goals, and the harder it is, that's gonna edge you on. You are kind of living and dying a little bit more by your decisions instead of maybe auto-playing a little bit with, you know, just habit. You're maybe a little more focused on what you're actually seeing and comprehending on the field than, you know, if you're on an easier mode, maybe you're just plugging away, which I think I kind of do.
And it really depends on why you play the game. Games like Stellaris have a very different kind of pacing as well. So it's really a very different comparison if you play a game like Civ. But I think that challenging yourself will make you more involved in the game. Sure, it will probably mean you will lose like a couple of times as well because of it, because you are playing at a higher difficulty, but also you will improve your gameplay, you will become better at the game, you learn to make the better decisions, and I personally really enjoy that in the game, seeing yourself literally progress and becoming a better player while playing the game. I find that immensely enjoyable.
No, I can absolutely see that. Do you have any, and this is a hard question to ask because it's not really, I don't know if this is an advice question, so much as it is a game design question, maybe. But so I kind of alluded that one of my problems, I know it's one of my problems because I really internalized it when I was playing those couple games last weekend, where I played England on Friday and Poundmaker on Saturday, and I enjoyed both games until we got to the point where my cities really, a lot of them weren't really making many new buildings. I'd captured a couple. I'd gotten maybe more than 8 cities, and not many more, probably about exactly 8 roughly. And I was just feeling a little bogged down with decision making. I was like, I don't feel like the decisions I'm making right now are radically changing the game. What era would this have been in? This would have been, I want to say I had like It might have been, it was not the Atomic, so it might have been, like, modern era, or could have even been just, like, I think we're doing Steam stuff. So, I think that's where I was about. I think we had factories unlocked. And at that point, like, the factories are built, but I kind of hit this weird lull. Is there, do you have any ideas, Voucher, how you get around kind of that later game issue? I mean, other than just playing higher levels, is there something maybe strategically you can do even, like?
Well, probably, a big complaint game design wise mm-hmm. that has been made throughout like the beginning of this game is the removal of the production queue.
Oh, yes.
And I feel that is something that you are struggling with, and a lot of people are, that they have so much to do with so many cities, so many tiny things to manage mm-hmm. that they kind of lose interest in it.
Right.
Having a production queue like solves a lot of those problems, because you can just manage a city and put a couple of things in a queue, and it will be so many more turns later that you have to look back at it. And therefore, you're minimizing the micromanagement you kind of have to do in those later ages of the game. And we talked about CQUI before. CQUI actually also adds a production queue.
Oh.
There is no, like, you're not cheating or anything like that, because you could literally micromanage yourself out of that way as well. It's just more annoying. Having a production queue is just really, really nice to have. It's a quality of life improvement. And that's another thing that I really like from CQUI.
I have to admit, you're right. I think when I was playing with a production queue, because I was just using a standalone production queue mod, which there's that really popular one out there. It's just really basic and efficient. It works. Those games, I didn't run into this sort of issue, because I guess, you know, whenever a city has nothing to do at the moment, you can stick it on doing those the specialty district projects, like, you know, commercial hub sort of thing. And those are great because, you know, you get some money, you get some extra great person points. If you really don't have anything to build, I mean, so that's really what I ran into the issue of, where it was like, well, I could use this city to pump out troops, you know, or it's going to be that project. But when it comes to, you know, all I have left to build is a water mill in this city for the moment, and I don't need a water mill. So what am I doing? You know, I'm not looking to send settlers just yet. I'm not looking to go on an offensive. I think I was actually playing a science game, so I was doing a lot of the campus, you know, research project-y sort of things. And I think you're right. Maybe had I had the production queue, you know, updated and ready to go for Rise and Fall, that might have killed some of that problem. I really do miss, and we've talked about this many a times as well, but I miss being able to just puppet cities that you capture. I don't always want to redo it all. I would prefer to... I like to go wide in the sense that I like world domination. I like to see the map colored in my color, but I don't really want to have to worry about managing all of those cities. Like, I still only care about... what I think I enjoyed in Civ 5 was controlling, you know, my core five cities or whatever it is, then capturing other cities, not necessarily puppeting those ones. And then it wasn't until I was a couple cities further away where, you know, transit lines became more important, where I needed to actually have a city that can train troops and then retrofit that city to my needs. And I could almost argue in a very, very minor way that I feel like that weird strategy balance that I just said is actually just kind of non-existent, because now you have to manage all the cities. Just like, well, even if I don't really need this one over here for strategic purposes, I've still got to be its shepherd and take care of it. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's a big problem. And usually how I deal with it is just raise the cities that I conquer that I don't want to actively deal with, and just keep like one or two around on the front line.
So you just raise them all?
Yeah, I raise a lot of cities when I go on a war spree.
Maybe I should start doing that. Maybe I should start raising cities, because that's something I would have never done in Civ 5, but maybe that's something I just need to take more advantage of in Civ 6, is just forget about it, like, just erase it. So,
yeah, that's a big, like, game design change that they did in Civ 5, from Civ 5 to Civ 6. Like, the puppeting a city just doesn't work here well. There was a big downside when you conquered a city that you had to kind of build the courthouse, it was, before all the unrest went away. They made a game design change that you don't fully own the city, it therefore doesn't grow either until you finish the war and actually transfer control of the city towards you. That way, it's really difficult to bring back the puppeting mechanics, I think, because there's just no big downside of having that city. You already got a warmonger penalty for it. That's the biggest downside of capturing a city. And now they have loyalty, which is a small thing that you have to deal with. But beyond that, yeah, no, there's no real need for puppeting the city. There is no upside to it beyond literally like not having control of it. With that, then the only thing that really that they could do that comes close to giving that is being able to kind of set a city on governing mode, mm-hmm. which like you can choose to put on and off on every city that you have, where the city will just pretty much auto manage. Maybe even where you can set a preference like, I want you to auto manage, but I want you to focus on production. Therefore, you should build an industrial hub and industrial zone and things like that. That's the closest thing that they could bring in to bring that kind of like hands off on a city back in Civ 6 at the moment.
I admit I would like to see that. I don't know if I would love how it would be implemented. Can't say that for sure, but I actually kind of like that idea. I mean, I think with my and I could be, you know, I'm not a very strategic guy in my Civ games, but I think what I liked about puppeting back in Civ 5 was the simple joy of, first of all, you know, you've just got more cities, so you've more, you know, just more, bigger, better. But it was really like the money income from it, you know, it produced some extra, I think it did extra science, or maybe that neglect, maybe that, I don't know, something about how maybe having more cities also hurt your science, I can't remember exactly. But I remember more income, and I liked the income, because then I could buy more troops, and it meant more war. So
the way it was in Civ 5 is that for every city that you have, you increase the cost of the tax.
Right, okay. I was going to say, I thought that there was some sort of penalty for that.
Yeah, there was definitely a going wide penalty in that way.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I hope some of this advice or our thoughts on this helps, Turner. I'd be curious to get an updated email now that Rise and Fall's out, because I think this came out about this email we got a week before Rise and Fall hit. This is like the 30th of January, half a month late. But I'd be curious to see your thoughts after having Rise and Fall to see if any of that has changed it. Did you play through any games of Rise and Fall completely? I didn't. You know, I still got to my usual point and was like, okay, time to do something new. But I don't think that's new for me as a character, as a human being. I think that's my trait. But yeah, write us and let us know.
Good. We really differ from that. I have finished the game as every new civilization so far.
Wow. So you've done all of them, huh?
Yeah. I wanted to finish at least one game with all the new civilizations.
Who's the favorite?
It has to be Korea. They are such a powerhouse. They will get nerfed in the next patch, no doubt about it.
Did I tell you? I did do a game as Korea, too.
You didn't.
I took your advice. Well, I forgot. I completely blacked out until this moment. I did that. You told me on Saturday to play a game as Korea. Did I have my days off? Like, I played England, then I played Poundmaker, and then you told me to play Korea. So it must have been last Saturday I did Korea. I did really like them because of I don't know the name, but their specialty campus district is really cool. That was very
neat. Shaewang, I believe. No, that's her name. That's her name, isn't it?
We just call her all of her things.
Oh, no, the Shaewang was the district, and Seongdeok is her name.
Gotcha. Well, the Shaewang I like because of, you know, mines that are around it. You get that plus one science. I mean, you really start to eclipse people, like, a lot. And so now, again, I was on king mode, so, yeah, take that for what it is. But I started to notice that my neighbors were falling radically far behind when it came to science. Yeah. And we were playing, I think it was science and domination victories were enabled. So they were going one of those two routes. And they weren't keeping up with science, that's for sure.
So. Oh, no, when you build the Shaewang, you just skyrocket in science so quickly. It's really, really powerful. It's a district where you have to pay a lot more attention to because you can't place any districts directly next to it because it will diminish the science from the Shaewang. It will improve the other district that you place next to it, so it can be a trade-off, but especially when you eventually unlock the policy for double adjacency bonuses, then you have for every Shaewang you have, you get 8 science flat.
Wow.
It's really, really powerful.
That is amazing. But you're right. I did notice in my when I started to get into that autoplay sort of mode, I was like, well, I just need to plop some things down here. This city requires an industrial zone. And I would almost click it next to it a lot just out of habit. And I was like, oh, nope. I know it's got that one extra point, but no.
I have done that in a couple of times that it was like, oh, crap, I placed an industrial zone right next to the Seiwang ride, didn't I? Yeah, that's too late now.
Happens. Well, you mentioned, we'll use this as a transition. You think they're going to get nerfed. Is that correct, Voucher? We're going to talk about patch notes here, but you think that there's a big
old... It has to be. Like, when they first showed her off, the bonus was even larger than it is right now. And I believe that also her own bonus, which is plus 10 culture, plus 10 science, and also this with an established governor, I believe that used to be 15 as well.
Oh, boy.
And I believe the JC bonus was like a plus 6 or anything like that. It's even at a plus 4, it's really powerful because you can build it in every city because the cost is 50% because it's a unique district. That makes it so much easier to build it. You can literally plop down a city, build a Seiwang in a couple of turns, and get a plus 4 size. Especially in the beginning of the game, plus 4 is a ton. So while everybody is rocking out 5, maybe 6 signs, you can rock around 12 already. That's double. That's insane. It's powerful. And you keep snowballing out of control quickly like that. I'm not sure how they're going to nerf her, because reducing her adjacency bonus from the campus district directly is probably not like the best idea, because then soon her district will become, beyond the fact that it's cheaper, less good than others, because you can usually get a plus 3 science campus bonus. But there has to be something done, because she just kind of spins out of control too quickly.
Well, we'll see what happens. I wonder when we're going to get that patch coming through. Probably, let's see, these notes came out, this is the February 7th stuff, so this came out right around the launch here. I'm wondering, I'm just looking at the calendar, do you think they'll do one here in March after they've collected some data? Do you think they're going to give it maybe 2 months in?
It really depends on, because usually when they brought out a patch, they made some kind of improvement somewhere in the game as well.
Yeah.
So I figured that they have a focus for coming patch as well. And depending on how big that change is, that we might see it in March, but I would probably aim for April and have a spring patch.
Well, okay. Then we'll study these ones until April, when we'll be back here to go over more patch notes. So let's start it off. I pulled it up here. This is from Civ Fanatics. Okay, sure. Civ Fanatics Forum, or civfanatics.com. And let's see what we're looking at. These are the Rise and Fall expansion notes. We have, under enhancements, a reworked start position algorithm to spread major powers evenly across the map first, and then insert city-states in the margins, results in improved distances between civilizations and better quality for major civ start positions. Not knowing that was actually a change, Valter, I feel like I've noticed that. I have been happier overall with my distance from other civilizations at the start of the game. I've run into city-states usually more often than I do another civ leader first.
That's interesting, because I had pretty much the opposite. I thought that it was worse even.
Really?
I played two multiplayer games yesterday with two of my friends.
Uh-huh.
And even when I played single player, a lot of the times there is a capital of just like maybe 10 tiles away from where my current city is. And that's way too close for me.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
I've had a couple of those games. In the other games, then everything was fine. But I feel the algorithm has some problems somewhere, because I've seen it a little bit too often to be coincidental, I think.
Okay, so you've had bad. I've had pretty good. In the Archipelago map, the new one that came with this expansion, I did notice that one, I was always third on the same little island strip with someone else, which I thought was a little bit weird, admittedly. I know I'm kind of going back on my word, but...
That's interesting, because in the Archipelago map, I didn't have that. I had actually a really good way of the algorithm doing its work.
Gosh, I think I did like 3 or so, and like 3 restarts or something, because people were like, ooh, redo it, because... Yeah, no, so that's weird. Okay, so we had reversed, but we'll see how that works out. Maybe we won't Maybe it'll
be
fine.
We just need some more experience because this is pretty much anecdotal evidence, and we can't say for certain that this is definitely the algorithm that's working or not working.
Exactly. And you guys can let us know on Reddit. If this has been a thing for you, please do make a post and let us know, just out of curiosity. Another note, they added a notification about production salvaged from a wonder. Make sure that production is credited. Okay, sure. Well,
yeah, and that's the thing that when I read this patch note, I was like, are you saying that this has been a thing the entire time? Because I'm pretty sure it wasn't. So now when you build a wonder, and say you're halfway through or just one turn away, and Shaka's being an asshole and finishes the wonder before you. Your city that you were building the wonder gets scrapped. You didn't get anything for it. That's the way at least I thought it worked. Now, though, you get a nice pop-up and saying you get this many production hammers back from the scrapping of the wonder that you can now invest in something else. And it actually works. You do get a shit ton of production back from wonders that you almost finished, or even if you've worked only one turn on it, you get production back from it.
So we weren't getting production before is what you're saying, and I've just been disillusioned for the last year?
I'm pretty sure that you did it. I mean, I might have completely missed it, and they now also say make sure that production is credited, does lead me to believe that there has been some issues with it if it was intended to do so, and why I haven't taken it for granted, because there have been too many opportunities where I didn't get a production credit or something like that.
Interesting. Okay, so those enhancements are a little bit strange, both of them. They're very hard to put, your finger on either. Balance changes. Diplomatic actions now scale with game speed. Government policies that increase production on melee class units now include anti-cavalry class unit. Stop me, Valter, by the way, if you think any of these are stellarly amazing.
I mean, this one was a no-brainer for me that they should have been in the beginning.
Yeah, but anti-cavalry class units count as melee. Yes. Change tech boost for steel to add a soft prerequisite that hints you probably want ironclads before destroyers. Change tech boost for steel to add a soft prerequisite that you probably... Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, so...
It's the thing that a lot of people have a lot of troubles with, because there are sometimes lines in the tech tree which makes you assume that it's a prerequisite tech for later tech. Well, what it is pretty much a soft prerequisite, like they call it. You don't need the tech. Well, they kind of recommend you to do so. And it has been there for a couple of techs in the beginning of the game, but it's not clear.
Yeah, well, I hope that cleared it up, because that, I mean, I get it, but yeah, okay. Barbarian difficulty has been updated to scale with each difficulty level. Really? What is that? Difficult has been updated to scale with difficulty levels? They weren't before? We're talking Warlord, Prince, King, etc. here. Were they all...
They weren't before. The usually why you had more or less troubles depending on your difficulty is because how the AI dealt with Barbarian. And now on the higher difficulties, you will have a lot more trouble with Barbarians yourself. Not just because you're producing less and everything like that, but because the Barbarians are actually more of a nuance to you as well.
Oh, okay. Healing plundered reward from farms reduced from 100 to 50. I feel like you have things to say about that.
Great change. If your unit was almost dead, just split your farm and you're back to life. You've been hammering away at that enemy swordsman or whatever, and it just spills your farm and it's like nothing really happened. And going to 50, that's fine. That's you still have damage on it if it was really damaged. Mm-hmm. And you now need to make a conscious decision. Do I want to heal it up now? Do I want to save it for later? Those kinds of things. I'm pretty happy with this.
I like it, especially as someone that's very noticeably, I'm sure most people have had this situation happen, but yeah, if the AI is at your city gates, you're already feeling down on your luck and you've almost taken out that really strong, tech ahead of you unit that, has been hammering away at your people, and it just healed itself by destroying one of your own farms, to maximum. And then that's just kind of sad. So I like this change in all ways. I think that sounds good.
I do need to correct myself, though, about the tech with the steel thing.
Yes.
Because I just looked it up and I kind of misunderstood what they meant. The tech boost for a steel now is literally the boost itself is that you want to have a coal mine and an ironclad built.
Oh, okay.
And I thought they meant something else. But yeah,
I want to say
this is
that,
their way of hinting it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, that's good. I remember seeing something like that. That's what I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. And I didn't have an ironclad, so I don't think I caught that eureka. But what else are we looking at here? SAC government policy has been removed and its effect has been added to the raid policy. Okay. Naval combat changes. Bombard land units are now more effective. Bombard land units are now more effective against naval units. Ranged land units are less effective against naval units.
I like that change personally. Yeah. I always hated it that a crossbowman could take out easily a frigate or something like that. Well, not easily, but it wasn't that much of a problem. It makes more sense that a big cannon could take down a ship than a couple of crossbow bolts.
Yep, nope, fully agree with that. I like it. Pillage rewards are now displayed in the tooltip and the pillage action button. Rewards?
Great change. I love it.
Displayed in the tooltip. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So when you hover over the pillage button, it actually says exactly what you get from it.
That's great. I like that change. That makes sense to me. Boost the number of random apostle promotions from 2 to 3.
That's a really big change.
That sounds like it.
Like, it's huge. Because now your apostles will have... there are a couple of promotions amongst apostles that are significantly better than others. For example, triple power of spreading in another civilization, or eradicating 75% of the present religion while you spread. You will now have a larger chance of drawing those. And it also ties in with a change that is a little bit later on in the list in the bug fixes that makes apostles so much stronger now than they were before.
Okay. Reduce science per population from 0.7 down to 0.5. I don't know if that's massive. That's reduce science from...
It's... You don't notice it.
Okay. Great.
It's not that noticeable.
Oops, sorry. Great admirals and great generals have a combat bonus and a movement bonus. They no longer stack.
That's smart.
Yeah.
There were situations where they did stack, and that lead to really silly things if you fought along the coast.
Wow. Oh, boy. Gold and faith rewards from tribal villages now scale with game speed. Am I crazy, Valter? But, the goodie huts that I've found from tribal villages, is it just simply, era points and stuff now? I've gotten nothing noticeable from...
Oh, no, they actually still give things. They can give population, recon units, builders, stacks, boost, fate, gold.
I got none of that good stuff. I would get gold and era points, and that was about it. Maybe I got...
Every time you clear one, you get era points always.
That's fact.
You just get
order
one.
Based
But beyond that, they still... And I believe what I read somewhere is that in between, they actually upped the rewards as well.
Bah.
So that you get better rewards out of the trouble huts as well. I think you've just had very bad luck.
Very bad luck. Maybe I did get a population thing and I just, didn't notice it, in all honesty. But I feel like all of mine were gold. Because I was looking for it in some ways. It's possible that population would have slipped me by and I wouldn't have noticed. But I did look and I was like, this is gold and the obvious era points. But I was like, did they... In my mind, at the time, I was like, did they swap it? Do we only get era points and gold now from clearing? I'm like, if so, that's really boring. So I'm glad to hear it's not gone.
No,
sad to hear
not.
My luck sucks. But we'll deal with that another episode. Okay, on to general bug fixes here. Apostles could run out of random promotions to choose from. Is this the one you wanted to talk about in relation to the 2 to 3 from above?
Yeah, this is the one that I hinted on before. You could have the thing that... I'm not sure if it completely is gone, but that apostles would kind of get stuck on running out of a list of promotions they could get.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that in the end, you were drawing a lot of promotions that were less appealing to you. And eventually, if you just build enough apostles, the list would just end and there were no promotions left anymore. I think that it's still the fact that if you choose the same promotion over and over and over, that eventually you will draw them less.
Oh.
And So that way you kind of even out, and you have to take all the promotions until like the list kind of resets and you can get everything again. I think it's just a chance-based system right now.
Interesting. If a spy is traveling to a city that changes hands, abort travel and return to your capital. That sounds smart. What happened before? Your spy got stuck there?
No, it actually kept traveling towards the city, then noticed that the city changed hands and would go back.
Oh, I see. A bummer. It's wasting time.
It was literally just wasting time. You could not stop him.
Bummer. Good to see that's fixed. Warrior monks now benefit from great generals and can earn the Spear of Fion promotion. Fion.
I think it's Fion.
Fion. Good. Yay. I don't know what that means, though. I don't know what the Spear of Fion
Warrior monks were added. They were added later in the game. The Spear of Fion gives you plus 5 combat strength,
oh, yes.
I believe.
Yes, you're correct. It comes to the Giant's Causeway. I have seen this one, yes. Land units that enter adjacent plots receive the Spear of Fion, which is plus 5 combat strength until the unit is upgraded.
And since warrior monks were added relatively recently, there were some bugs with it, pretty much, that they now fixed, literally.
Great. That's awesome. Abundant resources will spawn sea luxuries, which I have noticed. I did that. I think that the Korea game I played, we were spicing things up and we did like an abundant resources map just to make it like really rich. And the sea resources were aplenty. There were a lot of whales and all kinds of good stuff out there. Well, fish, whatever
nice.
It is.
I like this.
Is it whales? Do we even have whales anymore? Is it just
there
fish?
Are still whales in okay. there.
You see how much I know. Units levied from city states will now retain any promotions earned while controlled by a player. Oh, okay. So now they're going to keep. So whatever they get in combat under your control, they will retain once they go back to the city state's control. Good.
It makes it more useful to actually levy the city state units, because if you want to do it later on again, then they will have better units to work with that you worked with before.
And if you lose control of them, now you're screwed because they all have upgrades and they're coming for you.
Yeah.
That could be fun. Fixed several issues with obsolete units appearing in the production menu for a city. Obsolete units. I'm trying to think if I've seen that. I don't think I had encountered that at all.
I don't think I've seen that either, but yeah.
Someone has.
That would be really sucky.
Yeah. Fortified units will now properly wake up after being attacked. I would hope so. Fortified or sleeping units that have been expelled from a city will now properly wake up. Wait, did I just mix those two? No, those are two of the same. Okay.
Those are two different.
I started
so the first
wondering.
One is like if you have a warrior on a hill waiting for barbarians or something like that, he gets attacked and doesn't wake up. And the second one is you lose your city while there was a unit is asleep in that city. And then you lost it because you have no clue where it went and it still didn't wake up.
Those were such both very useful but similar points. I thought I started to blur the lines together. Support units can now be levied from city states. That makes sense. Fixed a bug preventing ranged cavalry class units from receiving the combat bonus from the Spear of Fion ability. Another Spear of Fion in there.
Yeah.
Fixed an issue with embarked units not being able to heal in friendly territory. So now your embarked units don't need to actually land their ships. They can heal when they're in your friendly. That's smart. And I feel like I've noticed that before. And in passive games, that was annoying. I think
yeah,
I did.
It was. I had the same problem.
Properly abort all spy missions if a city changes hands. Great. Ties into the above. Fixed an issue that caused zone of control UI to show between religious units of the same player. Did you see that, Valter?
I actually have never seen that, and I've played quite some religious games with plenty of apostles and everything like that, but I haven't seen that. Might be I've been more of a thing with inquisitors or missionaries because I don't tend to use them often, but I have not seen that.
Interesting. We got a properly update siege status of a city when units die or are deleted, etc. That makes sense. And I'm not sure, but I feel like I noticed lag in the past between when a city should and should not be under siege because of, you know, positioning. So I could just be making that up.
I think so too.
But it's
no, I think I have
familiar.
That too. And I do notice that. I did notice at least in one of my games, especially when I was playing Shaka, I had a lot of cities on the siege a lot of the time. Uh-huh. And that it felt more like natural and quicker the way that I thought it was working. Sometimes I was like, hey, am I laying siege to it already? What? Oh, right, I actually am. And that were definitely situations where it wouldn't have been on the siege before, that I had the same kind of positioning and the city wasn't siege.
Got it. Well, good. I'm glad they fixed that one up. Don't award a spread religion charge to Gurus from the mosque. What? What is that?
Gurus are...
These gurus?
The gurus are like the medic of the religious units.
Oh, okay.
And the mosque is a building you can build if you select it from your faith.
Sure.
That gives a plus one extra charge to your apostles and your missionaries when built in
a
city.
I thought that was a name. I thought it was a named unit that I wouldn't have known. Sorry, it's gurus from, obviously, the mosque. Yeah. Make sure losing candy. No, that's not how you say it. Is it Condi? How do we say that city? Make sure.
I always call it candy because then I can say, I want candy.
Yeah, fair. Let's do it. Make sure losing candy as an ally doesn't interfere with the reliquary's belief. Okay, sure.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
That makes sense.
Good. Moving on to AI fixes. I don't know if we'll get through all of these this week. We might come back and touch on a couple if there's anything important. But these AI fixes should be pretty good here. Fix an issue that was causing the AI to send multiple spies on the same mission. Oops. AI will look at graphic change on spaceports and can target their spies to spaceports that are performing their science victory projects.
It's something that even a lot of players don't know is a thing, and therefore the AI will become more dangerous. It's a thing that I've been saying in my strategy sessions as well, like, you should take a look at those spaceports because there you can see how far along they are and where they are doing a thing. And it's a good thing that the AI will also take advantage of those resources that are clearly available to you.
That's awesome. Yeah, you called that out at the start of the show, basically talking about those map improvements.
Yeah.
Improved opportunity cost considerations for district placement. So they will... weigh those more seriously, it seems like. So improved opportunity cost considerations. Improve ability to place and use aqueducts. I could use that upgrade too. AI knows to move builders back into their territory if they get caught outside. Okay. AI will not complain about stealth units. It can't see being too close to its border. Yeah, that does make sense. Mm-hmm.
I've had that problem before, that I had a couple of, I think they call privates or something like that. The ship that is not seenable unless you're next to it.
Yeah, privateers. Yeah.
Yeah, the privateer, that was. And I was like literally readying an assault with them. And I was like, nobody can see them. They don't know I'm coming. And I'm like, you're moving troops next to our border. And then I was like, how did you know though?
Right. It would be like having submarines in your territory and complaining about it and you can't see them.
Yeah, yep. Something like that.
Yep. No, I get it. That makes that. I'm glad that change is in there. That's very important for a sneaky, you know, attack. AI is much less likely to trade its cities away as part of a peace deal. I don't like that change as much, but it does make sense. Yes.
Just completely wipe them out. You can't keep the cities that you want.
You know, I remember this, though. They were very willing to trade me cities in the last year. They were very willing. You're like, yeah, just take one of the lame ones. It's fine. But in Civ 5, they would have never given away a city.
Big time here as well. They are very unlikely to give the city away unless the war is over and you kind of obliterated them.
Well, it does make sense. Improved resource trading. The AI considers luxury resources in... Improved resource trading. AI considers luxury resources it is currently importing. So, as...
They don't import like the same resource twice.
Makes very good sense. Yeah, and I can see how that would have gotten overlooked in the past.
Yeah.
Improve new city placement. Also fix issues where the settler would try to travel through hostile territory to get an escort. What is that? Wait, it would try and get an escort from
the
hostile territory?
So the AI really likes... Yeah, they really like to escort the units.
Right.
And what they did, like, oh, I have a melee unit on the other side of this guy I'm fighting with. And I want to escort my settler with that unit, so let's just move my settler right to that guy.
Wow. That makes sense. Good job, AI. Glad they cleared that one up for you. AI prefers garrisoning ranged units over melee. That makes sense, because I had noticed they used to garrison a lot of melee units, which was weird.
Yeah.
If the AI can capture or significantly damage a target city, it may ignore hostile units nearby to do that. That is very good. As much as it's annoying to the players out there, it makes a lot of sense, because that was a realism killer for me when it was like, yeah. Oh my God, they're coming. It's, you know, this is going to be the unit. They're going to do it. It's like, oh, nope. They went for the swordsman. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now you're dead.
I've literally seen this in action yesterday when I played a multiplayer game where a friend's city was besieged by the AI, and he was like having a couple of units around them, but still the AI literally just focused everything it had on taking down the city so it could actually take down the city. Lost an extra unit in it, but taking down the city is way more important.
Agreed. Well, Valtteri, we got to the bottom of the AI patch notes. I think this is a great place to put a little cut in it where we can come back and quickly recap these ones next week. Did you have a strategy session thing you wanted to tout here on the show? A little, I can't even remember.
Oh, yeah, sure.
If you want.
Yeah, we did a strategy tip every, yeah.
Yeah, we're going back to the old days.
This one doesn't probably have specifically to do with a rise and fall, but it was something that I experienced, I think, yesterday it was, where if you ever visit the Civ subreddit itself, not the Civcast, but the Civ subreddit, people are insanely happy when they see pictures of Channel City. So yes. My strategy tip today is about Channel Cities and how awesome and powerful they can be, especially if you chain them together. If you don't know what a channel city is, it is a city that is placed on a land that borders two lakes or seas, whatever, between each other. And while placing the city there, you now made kind of a channel, because your ships can move through the city from the one side to the other side. If you have three lakes, for example, in the middle of a continent that's very narrow, you can place a city at each like land bridge between them. So you can go from one ocean all the way to the other one, which can be super powerful and useful, because that way you will be able to travel quickly to the other side of the continent without going like all the way around it. And I just love it to do it. First of all, because I kind of got spoiled by the Civ subreddit, mm-hmm. Also Civ Fanatics before that and everything like that. But It is also a thing that is actually really useful in the game that can give you many advantages, because travel time with sea units can be so intensely high if you have to go all the way around a continent, and having a channel is really powerful. So keep your eyes open for like one tile pieces of land which connect two bodies of water with each other. And don't forget, you can build a couple of cities to actually make that bridge.
I love it, Valtteri. I have not had a canal city in so long in a game of Civ. Unfortunately, you know, for as much as I love to play naval games, it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe if I'd stuck with more, well, the archipelago maps are a little bit fatter. I don't know. I haven't had a great canal city recently. But man, those were all the rage for me in Civ 5. Like, I would do whatever it took to get a canal city. I would even choose some less favorable land if it meant...
Oh, absolutely.
Knowing that, you know, you can cut that travel time in half. Especially when you get... you know, that might be a small thing, Valtteri. I just also haven't rolled stellar maps in Civ 6. Not nearly as much as I like the land generation in Civ 5. Like... I remember Civ 5 having these weird, weird land things where there'd be great oceans that would result in great battles, but you'd have this massive ocean, and then this landmass would weirdly, like, screw up your possibility of going anywhere. So canal cities were like, ooh, if you can nail one, change your whole game. I have not, like I said, I've just never really... RNG hasn't been on my side when it comes to rolling the map seeds. I don't know.
I mean, like you said, like having a canal city actually does make it a lot more favorable position, even if like the resources or the fresh water supply isn't there for it or something like that.
Yep.
It's still, well, if you're on the coast, there is some kind of fresh water, so it's not completely dead. But
yeah.
It is definitely worth considering, like, or probably not even considering, just doing it, just because you get such a great boon out of it.
You do. They're fantastic. Hey, question for you while we're on it, Valter. Do you know, I'm pulling up a picture here that I just got from Imgur that shows, it's actually England's city, and they've placed it as a canal city, but it has the rocky structure on the one side. I don't know what they call the cliff faces.
Ships should be able to pass through it.
Can they pass through that? Okay, that's good to know. Okay, I didn't know that. And as I say, that might be actually a really bad spot. They're just going to move it over one. But if you're saying they can pass through, then that's fine.
As far as I know, like, don't hold me accountable or anything like that. Okay. Don't sue me if you lose a game because of it. But I'm pretty sure that they still can.
You heard it here, everybody. Sue Valter when you lose your game of Civ 6. He is totally up to blame. Hey, guys, if you have some great canal pictures that you'd like to share with us, you could always go over to our subreddit, which is civcast.reddit.com, and you could plug it over there. By the way, thank you, Valter. I think that was a fantastic topic. Ooh, I want to pat ourselves on the back for two things. First of all, readers, we've increased readership very steadily. You know, it's been growing and growing, but we're at like 122 on Reddit. So hop over there, give us a subscribe, because that number's jumped up about 10 or so just since we've come back, which is awesome. Also, when I looked over at our last episode's performance, Kyle, you should have had this ready, man. We did pass the kind of like little goal I was setting in my my head. We have 1,009 listens to the podcast in the last week, which is really stellar. You guys, for some sort of like record or reference, I think in like the July of last year, that number was only like 300 and some. Like, if we could get 300, 350, we were really excited. Like, that was a cool number. But you guys, stellar. 1,009 in 1 week. That's a lot for us.
Yeah, that's insane.
I can't remember what our subscribers were back then, Valter, but we're about 862 podcast subscribers. So you guys are killing it on all fronts. Share the friends with more shows. No, share the show with your other friends that play Civ. I mean, I guess you could share your friends.
And even with those that don't play Civ, just get them hooked through the podcast.
Well, and Valter's had luck with that. Valter has had that experience where you've had people sit down and play Civ at your house, and they're addicted to it, right? Like, that happened recently.
Yeah, they're definitely up.
So,
like, when I played multiplayer yesterday, it was with the friend of mine that I got hooked on by showing her the game.
Here's what you do. You invite them over, you sit them down in front of Rise and Fall, you get them playing, and they're like, oh, you know, I don't know. Feed them a little bit while they're playing it, and then download, you know, subscribe to the podcast on their phone for them while they're there. Be like, no, before you leave, you subscribe to Civcast and listen to this on the drive home, or, you know, whatever commute. And that will that'll do amazing things for us. So thank you, everybody, for your amazing show of support. We really appreciate it. If you guys do want to give back, patreon.com/civcast is where you can find some stuff. Valter, are you working on a strategy session for
It is coming next week. Fantastic. And it is going to be about the Golden Ages.
Ooh, details. So we also might just chat. That'll be perfect timing, because you said we might chat just a little bit around Golden Ages on next week's podcast anyway.
Yeah, so and I will, in the strategy session, dive deep into how to maximize them, and is it good or bad to be in Dark Age?
Yes, with the Heroic Age swing back. I love it. That's fascinating. I'm very excited, Valter. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for doing that. So, yeah, everyone, patreon.com/civcast if you want to give back. That's an awesome way to do it. Otherwise, you can find the website. It is Civcast. I'm typing this in at the same time. Civcastpodcast.com. Nice and simple. Name the show plus the word podcast, and you're right there. You will find all the links that you need to get us on iTunes, Android. Hopefully remembering to export everything to YouTube. I think I've been doing a decent job. It's all archived on Twitch, though, and that's where we live stream. So you can find the link to Twitch. That would be awesome. We live stream every Saturday at about 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. You can use, you know, any calculations you need to get your own. But then there's Discord links, subreddit links, Patreon, Steam, anything, our contact forms, whatever you guys want. We've got it there for you. Valter, that's going to wrap it up for us this week, unless you have anything to add? Anything standing out?
No, I don't think so. See you next week.
Okay, awesome. Have a great rest of your weekend, Voucher. And to everyone else out there, just one more turn.